Voet Hanan El Hashem Boetahi Lemor. OU Israel presents
Come in. Welcome.
Shalom and welcome to another issue of Torah Tidbits Audio. I'm your host Phil Chernofsky, and this show is for Shabbat Nachamu, Parshat Voet Hanan, post Tisha B'Av, and it feels like a very, very long time since the last show, and that's because Tisha B'Av was kind of intense and has happened between last week's show and this week. Hopefully we will feel an upbeat for this week's show, as we should following Tisha B'Av. Recording and first broadcast Yom Chamishi, Thursday, Yud Aleph Menachem Av, 5770, the 11th day of the month of Av, which by custom is referred to as Menachem Av after the 10th, which was yesterday. So this is the 11th, Yud Aleph, and on the secular calendar, it is the 22nd of July. A lot to be said. We'll say some of it and leave the rest for some other time. Mishenichnas Av Mima'atim B'Simcha. When Av enters, we diminish in joy. This is a statement in the Mishnah, Masechet Ta'anit at the end, which it, when it discusses Shivasar B'Tammuz and Tisha B'Av, and it rings to the ear the more famous, well-known expression, although this is more original, and that is Mishenichnas Adar Marbim B'Simcha. When Adar enters, we increase joy. Now, it turns out that for increasing joy in the month of Adar, the month starts on a happy note. Purim and Shushan Purim are the peak in the middle of the month, but the month continues to be a joyous month with Nisan coming and Pesach coming, and a foretaste of the redemption, the Geula, and a hopeful anticipation of the Geula. So, Mishenichnas Adar, Marbim B'Simcha, carries with it two happy-ish months. In contrast, Mishenichnas Av Mima'atim B'Simcha, true, what is inaugurated with the beginning of Av is the period called the 9 days, which is really a little bit longer, culminating with Tisha B'Av and going through the following night until noon the following day of Yud Av, the 10th of Av, when according to our tradition, the Beit HaMikdash continued to burn. But after that, there is a change. People shave, people take haircuts, people start getting married again after a 3-week moratorium on marriage. People who have not done their laundry during the 9 days start their machines going, and they put on fresh clothes and they bathe. And what takes over is a feeling of nechama, the light at the end of the tunnel. This already started in token fashion on Tisha B'Av afternoon itself. Many restrictions on Tisha B'Av at noontime of the fast day itself. A few, very few restrictions are lifted. Specifically, it is no longer necessary to sit on the floor. One is not supposed to continue sitting on the floor, even though it is a sad day, and even though we are mourning the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, and even though all the other restrictions of the fast continue. But you sit on a regular chair. The shul is returned to its normal status. Minhag was to dim the lights at night and in the morning, and at noontime the lights go back to full force. The curtains were removed from the Aron HaKodesh, the Holy Ark, from the Shulchan, the table where the Torah is read, the Amud, where the Chazan davens. Those are put back. All the other restrictions of the day continue. But you get that little bit of feeling of the Nechama is on its way. And sure enough, in the Amidah of Mincha, we have a passage called Nachem, where we ask God to comfort the mourners of Zion and to rebuild the Beit HaMikdash. And we already have our eyes towards, after Tisha B'Av, after the 10th of Av, towards Shabbat Nachamu and towards Tu B'Av, and the mood begins to lift. I picture it in my mind's eye as a yo-yo. Those of you who know how to play with a yo-yo know that you do not wait until the yo-yo is at the full extent of the string before flicking it back. You do it when it's almost going to hit the bottom of its path. That's the time to begin reeling it in. And that's what happens with Tisha B'Av. 3 weeks intensified into the 9 days, further intensified into the week in which Tisha B'Av falls, further intensifies to Erev Tisha B'Av and Tisha B'Av Day itself, and before one gets totally depressed, we already see a tiny bit of that light at the end of the tunnel, the comfort of Zion, and the rebuilding of the Beit HaMikdash, the restoration of Jerusalem, the way it should be, and everything that goes along with it. We still have a long way to go, but we see the light in the end of the tunnel, and if you could see that light, it greatly lifts or eases a feeling of depression which could easily set in. Hold these thoughts, let's say, Tehillim Kuf Lamed, Psalm 130, and then we'll continue. Shir ha-ma'alot mima'amakim karaticha Adonai. Adonai shima v'koli, tihyena aznecha kashuvot l'kol tachanunai. Im avonot tishmor yah Adonai miya amod, ki imacha hasalicha lema'an tivarei. Ki viti Adonai kivita nafshi, v'lidvoro hocholti. Nafshi ladonai, mi shomerim laboker, shomerim laboker. Yachel Yisrael el Adonai, ki im Adonai ha chesed v'harbe imo fedut. V'hu yifde et Yisrael, mi kol avonotav. Achenu kol beit Yisrael, hanetunim batzara uvashivya, haomedim bein bayam uvein bayabasha, hamakom yirachem aleihem, v'yotzieim mi tzara lirvacha umeafela laora, ומשיבוד לגאולה, השתה בעגלה ובזמן קריב, ונאמר אמן. What I was trying to say before is that when it comes to Av, the first third of the month is sad. Two-thirds of the remainder of the month are joyous, or at least comforting. And one is not supposed to extend the mournful period beyond its normal boundaries. And that says something. We need to contain. We need to show the grief. We need to mourn, but that mourning needs to be contained. Mourning can tend to get carried away with, and then it becomes destructive. It's constructive when it fits within the guidelines of Jewish law and practice, and is not overdone. In fact, someone who overdoes this particular mourning for the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash is not considered praiseworthy, but rather is considered one lacking in the faith of the coming of the Mashiach, the rebuilding of Jerusalem, and the restoration of the glory of Israel. So that is the mood which brings us into this Shabbat, and we should, you know, act accordingly. There are those who write that following the three-week mournful period, this Shabbat should be up the notch to a little bit even more joyous. Buy yourself that special dessert, buy yourself a new tie or whatever, just to make it a little bit extra special. That's what Nachamu is here at the Israel Center. We will be having a Shabbaton that is a joyous experience for us and for all those who participate, and I'm glad we're doing it with Shabbat Nachamu. Okay, let's see if we could put this together. Vo'et Hanan, second of the Sedras of Devarim, is always, always, always the Shabbat after Tisha B'Av. Not only that, we read the first part of Vo'et Hanan, as we always do, last Shabbos afternoon. And that means that there's a little bit of the pre-Tisha B'Av flavor to the reading of Vo'et Hanan. And we read it again on Monday morning, which was Erev Tisha B'Av. And, more significantly, the Torah reading of Tisha B'Av morning comes from Parshat Vo'et Hanan, not because it is Parshat HaShavua, but because of the content of a prophecy, prediction, and feared fulfillment by Moshe Rabbeinu in describing a future time when the people will turn their back on God and worship idols. It's a frightening thing, but it is the direct reason for the destruction of the second temple, of the first temple, sorry, and therefore it is a very appropriate choice for the Torah reading of Tisha B'Av morning. Comes the first Shabbat post Tisha B'Av, the first Shabbat of comfort, Shabbat Nachamu, and we read the entire Parshat Vo'et Hanan. Which means that, well, I shouldn't say which means, because usually there is no direct connection between a Torah portion that is read and a calendar date. But I have been making the case, as I did last week, for Devarim belonging before Tisha B'Av and for Vo'et Hanan belonging post-Tisha B'Av. And I believe it's very much so. There are several ways that this could be expressed. The way that I feel this year, I say it like that because every time I come to a Jewish calendar date, be it a holiday or a fast day, I approach it with a sense of, okay, teach me something new. Let me find a new angle, because I don't want ever that my Jewish practice should be been there, did it. Thank God I have never been disappointed. I have never gone through a Jewish calendar date without some fresh new insight, and because of my position as editor of Torah Tidbits and the broadcaster and host of this show, I have an opportunity to share it with people. So it might not be a fresh new idea, but it is to me. I was struck by the clean slate, new beginning feel of Voet Chanan. Now, I'm not suggesting that the events of revelation from at Sinai and the giving of the Torah and the pronouncement of the Ten Commandments, which was way back in Parshat Yitro and is again this Shabbat, is purposely post Tisha B'Av, but it works out very well. Because after Tisha B'Av, after last week's Torah reading, of talking about the sin of the spies, which is another cause of the black date Tisha B'Av, here in Voet Chanan, we have this good feeling of here's another opportunity to make things happen differently. We're starting again. The fundamentals of Judaism, the Ten Commandments, the first passage of the Shema, the beautiful verse of Atah Horeita Ladaat, you taught us to know, Ki Hashem Hu HaElokim, that God is God, Hashem is God, Ein Od Milavado, there is another beside him. The emphasis in the Parsha of Voet Chanan on God's original plan. I'll take you out of Egypt. I'll bring you to Eretz Yisrael, the land of Israel, to live a life of Torah in the land where you belong. We are hearing it again without all of the events that occurred during the 40 years of wandering, without the sin of the golden calf, without the sin of the spies, without Korach's rebellion, without complaining about this and about that, a feeling of a fresh new start, which is just what we needed post Tisha B'Av. Okay, so now let's take a look at some of the details. Voet Chanan El Hashem, I implored God. You have to remember that this is the continuation of Moshe Rabbeinu's farewell address to the people of Israel in the last 37 days of his life. It began with Parshat Devarim last week. It continues for the rest of the book of Devarim. So, picking up where he left off, he had just told the new generation about the fact that it was decreed upon him that he would not enter the land and Yehoshua would be taking the people across the Jordan. And he adds a personal note that he implored God on that at that time, saying, Hashem Elokim, you have begun to show your servant your greatness and your strong hand. For what power is there in the heaven or on the earth that can perform according to your deeds and according to your mighty acts? Let me now cross and see the good land that is on the other side of the Jordan. Moshe Rabbeinu, according to our tradition, did not ask once, but asked hundreds of times to be allowed into the land of Israel. It was a lot more complicated than a normal situation, the bottom line of which is Moshe Rabbeinu was not permitted to enter the land, nor was he buried in the land of Israel, although the Torah testifies that his burial location is unknown until this day. Be that as it may, that's what he starts with, but then he continues to speak, to address the people. He almost had that moment of putting in this personal side, which he didn't have to share with us, so to speak, but he gets down to business now. V'ata Yisrael, and now Israel, Shema, listen to and understand the Chukim and Mishpatim, which I have commanded you this day to do in order to live and to come and settle the land which God has promised to give you. That's the reiteration, again, of the simple plan that God had for the people. I have said this repeatedly on Torah Tidbits Audio, and I have written repeatedly about it in Torah Tidbits. God's first prophecy to Moshe Rabbeinu at the burning bush included the words, I, says God, will go down into that land of Egypt, and I will take my people out in order to bring them to a land flowing with milk and honey, a good and expansive land, the land of the Canaanites, etc., what we call Eretz Yisrael. That was the plan. On the way to Eretz Yisrael, we were to receive the Torah, which would be our guidebook for life. So you can summarize the plan simply by saying you become a nation when God takes you out of Egypt, gives you the Torah, and brings you to the place where he wants Torah to be lived by you, his chosen people. Can you observe Torah in Cincinnati, Ohio? Can you observe Torah in Teaneck, New Jersey? Yes. Should you? Of course. But it is not the prime venue that God wanted for the Jewish people. Moshe Rabbeinu reminds the people to always remember that day of revelation at Sinai, either by first-hand memory or by being told by parents and grandparents what happened. But this becomes a permanent fixture in the collective memory of the Jewish people, and we have to make a concerted effort to keep these items, which the Torah repeatedly asks us to remember, and never forget them. It's very important to understand and be able to transmit Judaism from one generation to the next. Speaking of revelation at Sinai, Moshe Rabbeinu expresses a worry, a concern that he has. The difficulty is, at Sinai we heard God's voice, but we did not see him because he is not able to be seen. Not that he's invisible, but he is not subject to being seen. Hold that thought. We'll continue after what might be a short break, or, if you're listening archived, no break at all. You're listening to Torah Tibbetz Audio for Shabbat Nachamu, Parshat Vo'etchanan. I was just about to get into what to me is a very significant part of Moshe Rabbeinu's talk to the people. You feel his nervousness, his apprehension about this problem of an intangible God with human beings who like touchy-feely things they could see, things that they could experience in sensation. And we, human beings, have a difficult time relating to an intangible, infinite God. Just as an example, I mean, Moshe Rabbeinu says, be careful, be very careful, guard your souls, and don't make the mistake that peoples in the world have made since creation almost. Actually, according to Maimonides, it was from the third generation of the world and onward, that people would relate to the sun, S-U-N, in the sky, hot, powerful, life-giving, and say, oh, here is something to venerate. And at the beginning it was, here is something to venerate as a representative of this intangible God who created everything. But after a while, it became the main object of worship. And in some societies it was the sun, and others it was the moon, and others it was stars or planets, and others the great whale, or mountains, or all kind of things in nature. And Moshe Rabbeinu is very, very nervous about this, because nature is something that we can actually touch, and it seems to be a more comfortable thing to latch onto for purpose of worship. And therefore, Moshe Rabbeinu has to keep warning us. Now, Moshe Rabbeinu leaves this as a warning, but then continues with his prophecy slash prediction slash dreaded eventuality of turning away from God. But just reacting to his warnings about birds and animals and parts of nature and the heavenly bodies, one might think that you do would do well not to get involved in a study of nature, or even in an admiration of nature, even with good motives as being that which is created by God, because this is a real kind of fear. Comes Isaiah, Yeshayahu, which just happens to be, I say that sarcastically, the Haftorah of this week's Parsha of Vo'etchanan, and the very end of chapter 40, the last verse, beautifully answers that unasked question of maybe we shouldn't get involved with nature. Says Yeshayahu, that's not the way to go. Se'u marom einechem, raise your eyes on high and see who created these. He brings forth their legions by number. He calls them all by name because of his abundant might and powerful strength. There is not missing even one. All of nature was created by God. It is not the proper suggestion to ignore nature. No. Study nature. Venerate God for creating nature and for everything else. Always keep that healthy perspective, and I don't think we will fall into the pitfall that Moshe Rabbeinu is warning us against. A narrow-minded person might go in the wrong direction, and we have to educate them, him, them, whatever, towards the proper attitude. This is what we attribute to Avraham Avinu, Abraham, where he was the product of an idolatrous family which had generation upon generation and very long generations of idol worship, of missing the point, of working God out of the equation, and Avraham Avinu is the one who we attribute to putting God back into the equation as the prime mover and the prime creator. It was a process of his discovery of God, something which he transmitted through the generations, monotheism, not just Judaism, but Christianity and Islam flow from the original rediscoverer of belief in one God, and that is Avraham Avinu. Now, the Jewish way of, I don't know how you want to say it, of believing, is with a strong, strong emphasis, not only in belief in God, but in his absolute unity and uniqueness, where any concept of helpers is idolatry. Even a person who believes in a supreme being, but believes that he has helpers, and by helpers I don't mean that he created the sun in order to radiate energy onto earth so that we could live. That's not what I'm talking about, a helper. I'm talking about an assistant god, a god of rain, a god of thunder, a god of fertility, all of that is totally not acceptable in Judaism and is common in other world religions to some extent. Let's take a break here. What I'd like to do is read to you the first verse, two verses actually, of the Haftorah, Isaiah chapter 40. Following that, I would like you to hear how it is done musically as a way of getting us mellowed into the mood of Shabbat Nachamu. Nachamu, Nachamu, Ami, Yomar, Elokeichem, Daberu, Al Lev, Yerushalayim, Vikiru, Eleha, Ki Malat, Sivah, Ki Nirza, Avona, Ki lakha miyad Hashem, kiflayim bechol chatoteha. Comfort, comfort my people, says your God. Speak to the heart of Jerusalem and proclaim to her that her time of exile has been fulfilled, that her iniquity has been conciliated, for she has received from the hand of Hashem double for all her sins. And now, Noam Productions has an album which is a cappella, which is playable during the 3 weeks and during Sfirat HaOmer. They took exactly the same music and added musical accompaniment so that you can listen to it on an upbeat scale. Otherwise, the song you are about to hear is with the words that were just read from the Haftorah, Nachamu, Nachamu Ami, and they are mellow, and hopefully that will put us into a certain mood of acceptance of the promises for the future as comfort as we now strive towards the Geula.
Yeah.
Okay, back to Vo'et Chanan. We'll have to shorten things up a little here. We have, as I have mentioned before, a presentation of the Aseret HaDibrot, the Ten Commandments, with some interesting differences from the first time it was presented back in Parshat Yitro. Most notably is commandment number 4, the one about Shabbat, where in the first version of the Aseret HaDibrot, we have Zachor et Yom HaShabbat LaKadosho, remember the Shabbat day in order to sanctify it. And here, in Vo'et Chanan, we have Shamor et Yom HaShabbat LaKadosho, Kasher Tzivcha Hashem Elokecha. Safeguard, preserve the Shabbat day to sanctify it, as God has commanded. Generally speaking, in simplified terms, the Zachor command is considered a positive command. Make Kiddush. Show other specific or general acts of honoring Shabbat. The mitzvot asay aspect of Shabbat are summarized by the word Zachor. Shamor, preserve or safeguard, has the connotation of be careful not to violate the prohibitions of Shabbat. We have a concept that these two versions were simultaneously presented at Sinai. There was not two acts of revelation, it was one. And we summarize that in the language of the Lechododi liturgical poem of Friday night Kabbalat Shabbat, Shamor v'zachor b'dibur echad. The two commands, preserve and remember, were simultaneously given as one expression. In fact, the custom of using two candles for Shabbat minimum, even though halachically a single candle is sufficient, the minimum of two, which is our common practice, is based on the representation of Shamor and Zachor. Furthermore, in the presentation of Zachor, back in Parshat Yitro, the reason given for Shabbat being a sacred day and for our being commanded to observe Shabbat is because God created the world in 6 days and rested on the seventh. Therefore, Al Kain, for that reason, Beirach Hashem et Yom HaShabbat, God blessed the Shabbat day, Vayikad Shehu, and He sanctified it. Here, in Vo'et Chanan, a different reason is given for the observance of Shabbat. Lo ta'aseh kol melacha, do not do any manner of labor, of work. You, your children, your servants, your animals, the stranger in your midst. Lema'an yanuach avdecha v'amatcha kamocha, so that your servants will rest like you will, as you will, v'zocharta, and thereby you will remember, ki eved hayita be'eretz Mitzrayim, that you were once slaves in the land of Egypt, and God took you out of there with a strong hand and a mighty outstretched arm. Al Kain, therefore, same words, Al Kain, tzivcha Hashem Elokecha la'asot et yom ha-shabbat. Therefore, God commanded you to make Shabbos, to do the mitzvot of Shabbat and to avoid any of the prohibitions. These two aspects are not contradictory. They really summarize Jewish life. God created the world. God took the Jewish people out of Egypt. The taking of the Jewish people out of Egypt was a confirmation that He was the same God that created the world. The Ten Commandments begin, I am the Lord your God who took you out of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. It does not say, I am the Lord your God who created the world. But we know that He who created the world is He who took us out of Egypt. And these are rolled together. In the Friday night Kiddush, we say at the same time, not simultaneously, but consecutively, that Shabbat is Zecher Lema'asei Vereshit, Zikaron Lema'asei Vereshit, a memorial to creation, and we say also that it is Zecher Liyitziat Mitzrayim, commemorative of the Exodus. These go hand in hand throughout. There's a whole analysis about the miracles that were observed by the people in the events of the Exodus followed by Revelation at Sinai with the crossing of the sea in between are all demonstrations that He, only He, who created nature can go against the laws of nature when called upon in the performance of these miracles. These are two pivotal experiences in Jewish life, in world life, and the Friday night service of Shabbat focuses more on creation. The daytime in the morning service focuses on Ma'amad Har Sinai, the Sinai experience, and that means the coming out of Egypt and receiving the Torah. And the Mincha time service focuses on a Shabbat and Shabbatot of the future with the Ata Echad V'Shimcha Echad, you are one and your name is one, and this will be universally recognized, and that speaks of the Geula, the final redemption, the complete redemption. So you have a whole package represented by Shabbat of the beginning, the other beginning, and the end. I was going to say the middle, but it's not really. It's the beginning of the world, the beginning of the Jewish nation, and the ultimate goal of it all. There's a lot more to say. We didn't really touch upon Shema. Maybe we'll have a few moments to do that. But Vo'at Hanan is a sedra that says, study me well, look me over well, and learn and be inspired. It's not just learning, it's inspiration. On that note, I wish you a very special Shabbat Shalom. L'hishtameh.